We do expect certain things to happen in nature at certain times of the year. Like right now, there should be lots of green and growing things. By October, the trees should be ablaze with dying leaves and migratory birds should be flying south. Plenty in nature, therefore, is synchronized, but too much synchrony can be a problem for a species. And recent research shows that changes in a recurring weather pattern, the North Pacific High, could be leading to too much synchrony here in the American West. Let's dive into what that means. Brian Black is an associate professor at the Marine Science Institute at the University of Texas at Austin and is the chief author of some recent research on this very subject. Brian, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Yes, thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
I understand you have some Oregon State University experience in your background, too.
Yes, I do indeed. I was a research professor at the Hatfield Marine Science Center out of Newport, Oregon, with Oregon State University for about 10 years before coming to Texas.
So let's talk about the high-pressure systems that come in off the ocean. We're used to them. We get lots of them, clear skies and higher temperatures. What is special about the North Pacific High that you've been studying here?
Yes, and I've been particularly interested in wintertime North Pacific High and the wintertime climate patterns of the North Pacific High and its influence on the California Current, and also river discharge and terrestrial systems in terms of precipitation. And that the winter North Pacific High tends to be quite variable from year to year, and that you can have years with considerable precipitation, as happened with flooding a couple years ago, or extreme drought, as happened even earlier with the long drought from about 2012 through 16 in California. And so you can get this considerable year-to-year variability in winter climate that influences the marine, terrestrial, and freshwater systems. And it turns out that as that variability, it appears to have been increasing over time and setting up more synchrony within and among those systems across California and southern Oregon.
So synchrony, again, is just the effect of things being synchronized?
That's right, how they vary together. One goes up, the other goes up, and one goes down, the other goes down. So it's this project process where things become more homogenized in their signals. They vary together.
All right, so let's talk about the North Pacific High in a little more detail here. You're saying that it produces different effects. Sometimes it is drought, sometimes it is a lot of precipitation?
That's right. Whenever there's very strong Pacific High conditions in the winter months, that tends to lead to droughts on land because those high-pressure systems tend to deflect the jet stream to the north, and so you don't get those onshore flows of storms and precipitation. And at the same time, that also affects productivity in the California Current through influences on the process of coastal upwelling.
Okay, so all this is the atmosphere and the ocean working together and producing weather conditions on land as well as in the ocean?
That's right, and on ocean, because those years when you get very strong high-pressure systems that are associated with drought on land, those high-pressure systems also favor the kinds of winds that drive coastal upwelling. So when you're on the coast and notice those very strong winds from the north, those are driven by the high-pressure systems. And those winds from the north, in combination with the rotation of the earth, move surface waters offshore and lift deep, nutrient-rich waters up into the lit zones of the ocean where they can supercharge primary productivity, and that can ladder on up through the systems. So these high pressure years, you get great productivity in the ocean, but drought on land, and vice versa whenever those high pressure systems are weak and dominated by low pressure.
Ah, so what's good for ocean creatures is not necessarily good for land creatures and vice versa?
That's right.
So what is the usual periodicity, if I can use that as a word, of the North Pacific High? I mean, has it been fairly regular? Is it somewhat predictable or cyclical in a way that you can detect or has been up until recently?
Yes, so the North Pacific High is closely linked with the El Niño Southern Oscillation, which is a tropical climate phenomenon. And the El Niño Southern Oscillation, or El Niño, tends to oscillate every 2 to 7 years. From the El Niño conditions, which are associated with very low pressure, very weak North Pacific highs, and lots of precipitation and poor upwelling, as opposed to La Niña conditions, in which there's strong high pressure and drought on land.
All right. So then, what are you noticing of late, though? I mean, is the North Pacific High changing in how it responds, reacts, creates, or anything under that?
Yes. So a lot of climate research involves trends in average conditions or mean over time. But what we're noticing, and especially in California, is that we don't see a lot of changes in mean conditions of the North Pacific High at this average strength. But what we do notice is that its variability, its amplitude, is increasing over time. And as that variability of the North Pacific High has increased rather substantially over the course of the 20th century, it has also influenced river discharge, sea level, recorded at tidal gauges, upwelling, and precipitation across California. And as those fluctuations in the North Pacific High increase over time, so do the fluctuations in those other physical variables we've been tracking.
So the middles stay essentially the same, but you get wider extremes at either end.
That's right. It's a bit of climate whiplash, that the variability or the amplitude of the North Pacific High, and then those processes that are related to the North Pacific High, have been increasing over the past several decades.
You anticipated my next question beautifully. I was going to ask you if you'd been talking to Daniel Swain at UCLA about his precipitation whiplash article recently.
Yes, this is very much related to what his article describes, and is related to this North Pacific High also. And so my study, which happened to be come out at almost the exact same time as his, I'm interested in the retrospective studies of what are the past conditions and also hindcasting this North Pacific High variability from tree rings. And Daniel Swain is forecasting this into the future and whether this trend is forecast to continue, which, of course, it is from his research.
You've given us a new word today, hindcasting as opposed to forecasting. Brian Black is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, an associate professor in the Marine Science Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. We're talking about synchrony and the North Pacific High. You can join the conversation, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So what you're saying then is with the greater variables in the North Pacific High, we're getting some greater synchrony among creatures?
That's right. As this variability increases, climate tightens its grip, especially on physical and also biological processes that are sensitive to the winter North Pacific High, that would be sensitive to river discharge, to winter upwelling, to winter precipitation. And so that means that the biology becomes more synchronous across the landscape, is at least what's implied here. This study is focused mostly on physical indicators of the North Pacific High. But we know that this winter North Pacific High is very biologically important because, for instance, I study growth increments in trees and also growth increments in long-lived fish like the rockfish, and have developed growth increment chronologies for trees and then also rockfish out in the California Current. And really that the tree ring chronologies are from colleagues who developed them, who are now in Arkansas and Minnesota, but these blue oak chronologies that pick up these winter North Pacific High signals very nicely. And we can see it's the influence of the North Pacific High and plankton communities and these rockfish growth chronologies and the tree growth chronologies, and see the variability in those indicators increasing over the course of the 20th century. And the next steps are to further expand our networks of chronologies to evaluate the synchrony in biology as well. But there are other studies that indicate that increasing variability and synchrony can be deleterious or not beneficial to biology, because that synchrony means everybody is tied to the same fate. And you can think about this as investing in the stock market, as you want a diverse portfolio of for your returns, so that if one stock does poorly, you have others to help compensate for that. But if all of your portfolio is highly synchronous, then you're subject to booms and busts. You're going to face problems of boom years and bust years. There's nothing to buffer that variability. And that's the problem with rising variability, is that it tends to lead toward the synchrony. Everybody gets tied to the same fate. Everybody goes up. Everybody goes down at the same time. And your portfolio becomes less diverse. And that's the next step of our work, is to begin to investigate that in even more detail in biological systems.
So does it appear that way so far, of what you've discovered with the blue oak and the rockfish? I mean, with greater synchrony,
yes.
Do they appear to go way up and then way down?
Yes. So that the blue oak synchrony across these chronologies that many of my colleagues have developed around at the California region, they are becoming more synchronous over time. They all go up together. They all go down together. Much more than in the past, where there was more heterogeneity. there is less synchrony among them. There's another example, too, of a butterfly populations from around the Bay Area in California, and that some of those populations have gone extinct and attributed to rising variability in precipitation, because the butterfly larvae have to be well-timed with the plants that they're dependent on for food. And whenever there are extremes in precipitation, that timing gets off between the development of the larvae and the food availability, and so the populations can crash. And whenever you have extremes and synchrony, then everybody crashes, and you don't have anyone left over to help rescue failing subpopulations that might be nearby. Everybody gets tied to the same fate, and that can lead to extinction events that are compounded by habitat loss and fragmentation.
We've talked about some of this already this year, and I think it was about the butterflies too, but the idea that we don't realize how tight some of these windows are, that, you know, certain things have to bloom at certain times for creatures to be able to feed on them and continue their survival.
That's right, and I can say that Daniel Swain's paper would indicate that the window of precipitation may tighten even further in the future as things become more variable and presumably also more synchronous.
Daniel Swain's paper was the one about precipitation and whiplash, I can tell our audience. And then we're talking right now to Brian Black, who's an associate professor at the Marine Science Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. We're talking about the winter North Pacific high and the way that it seems to be doing a precipitation whiplash of its own over the years, which is affecting creatures on land and in the ocean, but perhaps getting them into synchronous cycles, which we probably would prefer they weren't in. Join the conversation on the Exchange. Your questions and comments welcome at 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So I want to delve a little further into what you did with the rockfish. Otoliths essentially deliver something to you that look like tree rings?
That's right. I was amazed to learn this myself. I was originally trained as a forest ecologist, but learned later on that fish also form annual rings, just like trees do, and they form them in a structure in their ear called an otolith. Ear stone is what that means, and they accrete calcium carbonate and protein over time. And whenever you thin section or cut a section through these otoliths, it looks just like a tree stump. And so we can apply the same techniques that tree ring scientists use to generate tree ring chronologies to the growth patterns in these otoliths to get the equivalent of fish chronologies that can go back many years, with these rockfish living to be 80 or 100. And when we complement recent collections with those that have been archived from the 1970s and 80s, we can cover most of the 20th century and get a long history of rockfish growth from these increments formed in the otoliths. And so that's been a major research direction of mine, is applying these tree ring techniques to growth increments in long-lived fish and also bivalves, but in the California Current, especially these very long-lived rockfish.
But that is, now that I think of it, a bit of a limitation of the research, is that you can look at all the tree rings and otoliths you want. The otoliths don't go back that far because the fish don't get more than about 80 years old, I think you said. But trees can be a lot older than that. The issue, though, is the weather forecast that would correspond to those, or the weather reports aren't that detailed back beyond, I would think, before the 20th century much.
That's right. And so what we can do is use the otoliths and other biological indicators, say maybe indicators of plankton conditions or seabird reproductive success, and combine those with the rockfish chronologies to find out what are the really important climate drivers of biology in, say, the California Current or on land. And once we know that, which in this case, the winter North Pacific high is one of those key variables, we know that the North Pacific high is also closely related to tree growth on land because of the influence of the North Pacific high on drought. And so what we can do is then hindcast that very important winter climate variable back through time using the trees. So although instrumental records might go back to the late 1800s, the trees can take us back six centuries or more to find out how the North Pacific high has been varying on these much longer timescales.
And the correlations are tight enough within the periods which we have records that it's very clear?
It's quite remarkable to see how these blue oak chronologies are synchronous with the rockfish chronologies. Even though one's on land and the other's at 300 meters on the continental slope, they're all dancing to this tune of the winter North Pacific high.
Brian, it must be fascinating for you to have the forestry background and then turn your attention to marine science and find things like otoliths to help you tell the story.
Yes, it's been a lot of fun, and I'm very grateful to the opportunities I've had at the Hatfield Marine Science Center to take me on as a postdoc coming out of a forestry program and to get me going in marine science and applying these tree ring techniques to marine organisms, which I've now turned into a major part of my career and has taken me to Texas now as well.
Just a quick side question. I understand the Marine Science Institute took a major hit from Hurricane Harvey, and what's the status of it now?
Yes, that's right. We are still very much under repair. There are $40 to $50 million worth of damages to this campus. But town is coming back. The Marine Science Institute, we anticipate, will be fully functional sometime late in 2018, early 2019. But progress is continuing after what was quite a devastating blow from Hurricane Harvey.
Indeed. Just to come back to a final point on the research you're doing here, and if people are looking for the article, it's in Global Change Biology. It's called Rising Synchrony Controls Western North American Ecosystems. The essence of this is not that it gets too hot or too cold for anybody, but that things can miss by a little bit, and it makes a big difference in a species.
Yes, that's right. Some of these windows, the phenology would be the technical term for that, the timing of these biological and physical processes can be very tight, and you need to have overlaps between what the climate is doing, what prey is doing, what the predators are doing. And so it can become very complicated from a biological perspective. And this first step here is for us to really address this issue of rising variance and synchrony in the physics and the river discharge, the physical indicators, upwelling, sea level, and next to maybe generate more chronologies to better address this in biology and compile whatever long biological records we have, which tend to be scarce, especially in the marine system. But hopefully the rockfish chronologies will provide us a shortcut to getting at these long records.
Okay, I'm sure we'll be hearing more about this down the road. Rising synchrony, of course, can get to where you have booms and busts in species. The booms might be great, but the busts aren't. Brian Black, Associate Professor at the Marine Science Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.